How you doing? Shaolin Muay Thai in the house.
Do you like the shirt?
I do. When I came in, I thought you were meditating. I was like, I don't want to disturb your dojo.
My body, my temple. My temple, my kingdom.
My body, my choice.
It is my body, my choice.
Absolutely. Are you recording?
I am.
Have you seen any of the TV spots for the new Star Wars movie?
No.
So in it, Emperor Liberace, this is like in every TV spot. He goes, the dark side rises and the light to meet it. And every time I hear it, I think of Ghostbusters 2. Wife to you and mother to me. There are many benefits of being the mother of a living God. Peter McNichol, everybody.
And there are many benefits to enjoying the Living God podcast that is known as Pop Culture Man Children. That is Micah Buongiorno.
That is Emilio Sparks. And how are you?
And together we're going to have you strap in and ride along with
strap
us.
In. All right, guys, if you're in your car, don't swerve. Get ready for it. Mother to me.
For more information on who we are and what we do, please go to our Instagram, Pop Culture Man Children.
I'm wearing a gold robe right now.
I like it. I like the lame.
It's my Snoke look.
I'm wearing my Shaolin Muay Thai t-shirt.
I know you look good. Everything looks tight, toit on you.
Thank you. I've been working out. But I've been eating like shit lately.
What have you been eating?
I've been keeping the strictly vegetarian-based diet, but I have been eating like pizza with no cheese on it.
So you have not been a vegetarian, you've been a wheatarian.
Yeah.
No good. That bread's no good.
I know. I ate some pizza and I've been really addicted to sugar lately and I need to fall back from that.
I haven't had sugar in 2 weeks, my friend, and I feel terrible.
You're going through withdrawals, right?
Right, yeah. But it's winter. You can't let winter kill you.
I'm trying not to, but I've been addicted to these cookies that Hershey's makes now.
Hershey's, really? What cookies?
They're just plain old chocolate chip cookies with Hershey's chocolate chips, and they're just so good, and they're soft bake, and they're delicious.
Well, listen, it's all about balance, isn't it, my friend?
Yeah.
And speaking of balance, let's get to the news, because I tell you where...
Segway Kings!
Segway! This is the police. I've decided I want to be more like Michael Wenslow on the show, if that's okay.
Could you even do impressions?
No, not impressions, just various noises.
Give me your best noise.
My best noise? Okay, this is the trailer to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Chick, bing, chick, bing. The one guy who got that, he's rolling around right now. He literally just crashed into a tree that he's laughing so hard.
Oh, I thought you were going to give me like...
I don't have the Michael Wenslow thing where... My favorite is when he would be like an object, and then people around would be like, where is that coming from? As if it's clearly not a human being standing behind you. But going back to my great segue about balance, I'll tell you where there isn't balance in the force. There isn't balance in our media ownership. There's too much concentration on a corporate level. And it's going to get even more concentrated because this is our first news item. The news! I'm just trying to play with some sound effects. Like type in the background like a ticker tape.
Okay.
All right.
It's not working, but all right.
Damn it. Disney is going to buy 20th Century Fox.
Who called this?
You did. Well, you called. I'll tell you what you did call. You called on episode one that the mutant Marvel characters would eventually make their way over to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And you were right. It looks like because if they buy 20th Century Fox, it can happen.
So if you want to listen to that genius, you can go to iTunes and search Pop Culture Man Children.
Right. But if they're already here listening to this, they're there already.
Well, maybe somebody's listening on the Twitter links and the Facebook links that we send out.
That's
and
true.
They might not.
I just imagine 30 seconds into it when we were talking about our diet, they were like, I got to subscribe to this.
I would hope so.
This is the hottest shit I ever heard.
So let me get this straight. And this is... This is one thing I've always questioned. How can one studio start to monopolize and take over? Isn't that a government issue thing?
Well, monopolies are against the law, and they've been since the Great Depression. But oligopolies, where a couple of companies own everything is completely legal, even though it's basically the exact same ethical flaw. I always use the example of Coke and Pepsi, right? With soda, there's Coke and Pepsi, and then nothing else, right? RC Cola is way down there on the... So it's like that. So you couldn't have one media company, but you could have a couple. There are five large media conglomerates that control like 90% of the information in this country.
You want to rattle them off, Professor?
Offhand, I believe they are Disney, Viacom, News Corp, Warner Brothers, and Bertelsmann. Although Bertelsmann, despite being a huge company, isn't really... I don't believe they make any content. I think they're in telecommunications, but they're giant. And things come and go on that list. There are times where Comcast was on there. It's not on there anymore, but it's still huge. So News Corp now owns 20th Century Fox and Fox News and the Wall Street Journal and all those conservative media outlets. All they want to sell to Disney is 20th Century Fox Pictures. So they'd keep Fox News, they'd keep Fox, the channel, the network. But 20th Century Fox, the movie studio, would go to Disney. So you'd have more concentration in movie production. Disney would get a little bit bigger, News Corp would get a little bit smaller, and a portal will open up at the end of Avengers 3 and Wolverine's gonna walk out and be like, "Hey, bub." And then that's gonna be after the credits. That's the stinger.
Could you imagine if that happened?
A lot of nerds would be very either upset or excited.
The neckbeards on Reddit would most likely lose their stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like all of this stuff is like candy. You know what I mean? Like, I love pop culture, but I also... I don't ever, like, cry about it.
Well, you know what it is? It's too oversaturated. That's the problem. There's too many now, and, you know...
And it's too much to be upset about, I think.
Let's bring it all back home.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the intellectual properties back to your product, to your work. Clearly, we messed them all up. Now you have to fix them.
I like what they do over there.
Do you?
I like Logan. The new trailer for Deadpool just came out.
I think there's a big difference, though. I think they didn't care about Deadpool at first.
Oh, of course.
So they were like, you know what, Ryan Reynolds, do whatever you're going to do, because we think it's going to tank, because most of our superhero movies have tanked.
We don't care.
So we don't care. But then once they gave him the R rating,
yeah,
and allowed it to be a movie that was told in a way that the Deadpool story should have been told, and you could tell Ryan Reynolds is an actual Deadpool fan.
Yes, you can.
And he understood the character.
There's care there.
Exactly. So that's why they were like, oh, wow, we can actually recoup instead of taking a loss financially.
And not spend a lot on it. That's another thing. When you spend so much money on it, you got to please everybody. But the New Mutants trailer that looks like a horror movie, that looks cool.
They got lucky with Logan.
They got lucky with Logan.
I think they played it up that this was the last go-around. The way that it was marketed was done well. But the movie was shot really well.
I thought it was great, yeah.
Well, we went together and you saw that these actors knew the character so well. But I think from a fan's perspective, it was us going to say goodbye because they no longer want to do the roles.
I got a little teary-eyed, did you?
At the end, yeah.
When, spoiler alert, at the end... When Wolverine's dying and what's her name? X-23 is going, Daddy. I'm like, first of all, I'm crying. And then when they bury him and then you see the other little boy, he's got a Wolverine doll, like a Fox 5 1995 Wolverine yellow suit. It got me. And then at the end, of course, she takes the crucifix and she turns it to an X. And I was like, damn, that's a good movie.
It was deep.
It was deep.
It was deep. It all hits. But then you have X2, X3, not so
good.
Let's
pretend those didn't happen,
though. Then you have the Fantastic Four debacles.
You know what? Forget about that.
Rise of the Silver Surfer. I mean, you know, Galactus as a cloud. I mean, these things...
Listen, mistakes were made.
Massive mistakes were made.
But mistakes were made from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, too. Come on.
Yeah, but they're covered up so well.
Iron Man 2, Iron Man 3.
Do you know when the deal's going to be solidified?
I think the FCC is still mulling it over, but the FCC always goes with what the corporations want and not what the people want.
It's
so it's about as good as going to happen.
So the only intellectual property Marvel wouldn't own at this point again would be Spider-Man.
Right, because that's Sony. But obviously, they made a deal with Sony because Sony had no idea what they were doing. They were about to make an Aunt May spinoff. Really, they were. And
how does that work?
I have no idea. They were just grasping at straws.
And it wasn't going to be hot Marissa Tomei.
No, it was
some old woman.
Who played Aunt May in
Sally Field? So a Sally Field vehicle?
Yeah, maybe it was going to be her with Doc Ock.
I think that this is how they do it. Ready?
Pitch time.
This is how it happens. Aunt May is on the side of a highway. Doc Ock comes speeding. It is Trans Am. Tells her to get in the car.
This is the first shot?
First shot.
Okay.
You see where I'm going with this?
No. Screen cuts to black 2 weeks earlier.
There's a scene of Doc Ock at a rodeo. Mm-hmm. Laying down in a hammock. Big Enos, Little Enos comes up to him and says, can you make a beer run to Texarkana and bring back 400 cases of Coors in 28 hours?
Oh, I see what we're doing. For the kids at home, this is a Smokey and the Bandit reference. Ask your grandparents. Ask your grandparents about
Doc is played by Burt Reynolds.
You know what? I like that. Wouldn't he be a good Doc Ock, though, for real?
I think he would.
I want to see that happen in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. All right, let's move on. Going back to Disney, Lucasfilm said that they were so happy with the new Star Wars movie by Rian Johnson that they're giving him a whole Star Wars trilogy. After they fired Colin Trevorrow after the debacle that was The Book of Henry, and they said, hey, do you want to now do episode 9? And he said, no, I need a break. I can't do two Star Wars movies in a row. So they said, okay, cool, but we're really excited about what you did, even though it's not even out yet. We're super excited about it. So they went to J.J. Abrams and said, hey, do you want to come back and do episode 9, finish off this trilogy? So he's like, yeah, fans are excited about that. But then they release, in the future, in a couple years, there's going to be a whole new trilogy. They gave Rian Johnson carte blanche. Here's three movies in Star Wars. Do what you want. And
this is too good to be true. I don't believe them allowing this guy any type of creative freedom.
I think what they're going to do is, I think after, right now episode 8 is coming out next month. I think after episode 9, they're going to stop the episode Skywalker saga. And everything's just going to be spinoffs and offshoots and in the Star Wars world without having to deal with the main saga. Once they're done with 9 and the Han Solo spinoff and the Obi-Wan spinoff, I think he'll be able to do what he wants. We don't know what he's doing yet. Some people think he's doing what's called the Old Republic, which is like 1,000 years before the original Star Wars. Some people think he's going to do just like a kind of gritty like crime type movie that takes place in like the dirty underworld of Star Wars. We don't know yet. Look, Disney gave episode 9 to Colin Trevorrow based on the success of Jurassic World. But then when Book of Henry failed, they were able to get him out of that contract. So Disney does what it wants. They have a lot of confidence in episode 8 now, but if episode 8 comes out and it fails and they no longer are high on the Rian Johnson train, Disney will take away that trilogy as fast as they gave it to him.
I don't think it's going to fail at all, though.
Oh, no, neither do I. I don't think they can fail in a real sense. You know what I mean?
I think for a movie studio to already say a month before the picture even comes out that they're excited about the outcome of the film and they publicly make it known.
Yeah.
This actually shows that this movie is going to be fantastic.
I hope so. What we plan on doing is, since you've never watched a complete Star Wars movie, we're going to do a special episode on it where you, me, and a special guest are going to go see it. And me and the special guest are going to get into the weeds about it. And you're just going to sit there asking stupid questions. Like, who is this guy? Why is that guy gold?
I'm going to ask.
It's C-3PO. That's why he's gold.
I didn't even know his name.
Yeah. Even in the theater, you'll be bothering people.
100%. I'm going to be that guy.
Oh, also, Disney announced that on their new streaming service, because Disney is going up against Netflix, so they've got a new streaming service.
Good luck.
They're either going to end their Netflix Marvel shows or try to bring them over. So we'll have Jessica Jones and, the next season of Daredevil on their service, or they'll just start fresh. So there's going to be a live action Marvel show on the Disney service and a live action Star Wars show, which they've been talking about for years but never happened because it was. The idea was it was always too expensive.
But are they going to allow it to be gritty or is it going to be campy?
I have no idea.
Because the Netflix series are allowed to be gritty. They say coarse language.
Yeah, I think they'll do it.
It has a different tone and texture to it. Like, the aesthetics in Daredevil 1 drove me absolutely insane.
Right, and Luke Cage is great.
I'm big. Yeah, Luke Cage had great aesthetics. Like, I'm big into the aesthetics and the feel. And Jessica Jones had a good aesthetic to it. Like, they all matched each other.
Well, maybe what will happen is, I don't know, we don't know what it's going to be called. We keep referring to it in the media as the Disney streaming service, but it might not be called that, or there's a possibility that it's called that, but like within the interface of it, there are like folders. So it might be click on the mouse, right, on the Mickey Mouse, and then inside there's like the Marvel channel or the Star Wars channel, which would make it so if you had some coarse language going on in a Jessica Jones, say, you won't feel like, why did I get this streaming service for my kids? Because if you remember in the pilot of Jessica Jones, she fucks Luke Cage, what, in the second scene? You don't see that in Spider-Man.
No, you don't. You don't even see him masturbating.
No, you don't, which, come on, we know he is.
I mean, he's a 15-year-old boy with the internet.
That friend definitely masturbates.
Oh, the chubby kid?
Yeah, no, Ned?
He totally does. I mean, come on, he builds the Death Star in the room.
Well, I mean, that's cool of him. I don't know what you mean by that.
I mean, there's nothing else to do, so you know he's actually not going to physically see a pair of boobies, maybe until he pays for it when he's 21.
I disagree. I play with Legos. I build Legos, and I see boobies at least once every 3 or 4 years. So,
yeah, but you're a handsome fellow.
I don't have that hat that he has.
Oh, the fedora?
Remember what Aunt May said? Sometimes a hat wears a man, but you wear that hat. And then he says, thank you. Are you taking out a fedora? And now I'm wearing a fedora. Now I feel more like Ned. Fedora, but with t-shirt.
Class.
Thank you.
How does that make you feel?
You know, it feels powerful. It makes me feel powerful.
Like a young Sinatra. That's what you look like.
I don't think that's what I look like, but that's what I feel like for sure.
You look like a young Sinatra.
Where'd you get this?
I've had it for years.
Was it something you bought or did you inherit it?
No, it was given to me.
I have a fedora from my grandfather. It doesn't even fit my giant head, but I keep it as a keepsake.
You have to.
That and 14 bottles of wine he made himself in his own cellar. I'm going to take this off. I'm giving myself douche chills.
How many more streaming services do we need? At what point does cable television cease to exist and one big conglomerate like a Disney or a Viacom or even a Fox decides, okay, Netflix and Hulu are kicking our ass. Mm-hmm. I'm going to abscond these cable networks and I'm going to put live TV on a streamable app.
I think it happens now, honestly. And I think that if Disney succeeds, you'll see other studios, or maybe studio is not even the right word anymore, other corporations that have large libraries of intellectual property. You might see them go, okay, it worked for Disney, now it'll work for us. And I think it won't be a la carte for actual shows, because that's going to be too much. But I think it may be a la carte in terms of, you know, studios and libraries, you know, the Disney library, the, you know, the AMC library. They've tried a couple times to do classic movie streaming services with not great effect, but they'll get that right at some point. So I think you will have that. And I think, I don't know if cable TV is as much under threat as networks are, because the networks are the ones that still work on the old model of advertising. And with advertising, you have to not really have edgy programming because you need to not upset your advertisers. So I don't know how that works.
Yeah, but not every network television show is going to be The Big Bang Theory or This Is Us.
Right.
You know, you have shows like Blue Bloods and, you know...
But are you saying that that content is good or content is bad?
No, I'm saying that you're going to have some real questionable.
I think we have questionable stuff.
Yeah,
that's why
what I'm saying.
I think it's
yeah.
the problem.
Well, because I think you can get advertisers to do anything if the numbers are looking right. You don't agree?
I don't know. I mean, the numbers are important.
They're huge, and if you have a show like,
but there's a lot of fear, you know.
Like an NYPD Blue at its time was doing huge numbers.
Yeah.
Law and Order, SVU, was doing huge numbers.
Right. And right now, This Is Us is doing huge numbers.
Yeah.
But at the same time, how many shows aren't This Is Us?
It's very rare to have a show like that hit. But I also think it's about the climate within the country right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's so much going on that people like to unplug from that Trumpian matrix for a little while.
So you think they want less challenging kind of content, like that sort of networky? Because This Is Us, I like, but if it were on, you know, an AMC or something, we'd be seeing, what's the hot brother? The one who's on drugs now?
Oh, Kevin.
We'd see Kevin banging people out. It would be less sweet. Did you see the last episode?
I did.
That cutaway where you think he's going to hook up with that teenager and you're like, oh God, Kev, don't do it. That would have happened. That's you would have seen Kevin at a, you know, in some teenager's bedroom doing it. Why didn't you pick up that phone call from Toby?
Because he was too
Kate
busy.
Lost the baby.
He was too busy. You spoiled it for people. He was too
spoiler,
busy.
Kate lost the baby. Even though we just found out an episode ago that she was pregnant. So I don't know why we're supposed to be super upset about it.
Well, you didn't find out an episode before. You found out maybe like two or three episodes prior. It was the episode after the Stallone episode.
Right. God, that's a good episode.
It's really good.
Actually, I enjoyed it.
This Is Us, and eventually we're going to have to do a This Is Us segment.
Yeah.
I'm really into this program.
Of course. Me too.
It was about Kevin more than anything else because Kevin has been so self-absorbed. So why would Kevin want to pick up the phone when he's having this moment of his own where he's
right
contemplating how much of the universe has been allowing him to be a complete asshole, yeah, but yet reward him
right
with good things.
He's freaking out because he hasn't had a Vicodin in 4 hours.
Because he eats them like candy.
Yeah, and he's seen the ghost of his dad or a vision of his dad instead of his coach. It was a good episode because in the beginning you're like, yeah, I hate Kevin. This is why I hate Kevin. And then you're kind of like, all right, I like Kevin.
Oh, no, I still hate Kevin.
You still hate him?
Oh, I still hate Kevin.
By the end when he's crying going, I need help. I need help. I'm like, ah. I was like, is Randall going to run in like in the last season when he ran to Randall? But that kind of happened. But he went over Randall's house. He didn't run in.
See, I like the fact that they go to each other when they didn't have how it's perceived growing up, the best relationship.
Right, right. Because Randall always felt like the outsider.
And Kevin felt that Jack and Rebecca gave Randall more attention than they got.
Right, right. And then Kate was just...
Well, Kate was always the middle child.
She was just dealing with it.
She was, yeah, she just took it.
Yeah. She was a daddy's girl.
And she has her own mommy issues.
How do you think Jack died?
I think an electrical fire. I think the house...
Yes.
I think the electrical circuit breaker the house... is the precursor
foreshadowing? Yeah, you're right. Because it doesn't. When you see the power outage, it doesn't do anything in that episode other than to be a setup for later. But then again, he could also get drunk and fall asleep with a cigarette. I don't know. I don't believe that.
I believe that he cleaned his act up. He does his 12
steps.
You
think so?
I believe that. I believe that his family, God, we're really going down this rabbit hole. This is us right now. But I believe that his family was his saving grace, and he turns himself around, and I think that's why there's so much heartache when it comes to it. But I also want to know, because even Kate said she's responsible for his death, so I want to know why.
Oh, man, it's such a mystery wrapped in a cocoon of enigma.
And they said it. We might not find out for a while.
I don't want to. Let's do
but
it.
But the character of Jack is going to stay in the entire series.
Yeah, nobody's dead. Nobody's ever dead. Like, even, like, Randall's biological father showed up doing heroin. And I was like, oh, well, he's back.
Well, he didn't do heroin.
He almost did.
He almost did heroin because he had nothing to live for after he got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
And how good is William? You give me a William scene every time.
I like him in Luke Cage.
I start to just, the tears start to build in my eyes.
I love William. Anyway, our last news story.
Because we could talk This Is Us for...
You just have to subscribe to our spinoff, This Is Emilio and Mike.
Already doing spinoffs.
Yeah. The last news story, which I'm kind of excited about, is the team behind Despicable Me and the Minions is making a new feature-length Super Mario animated film. I'm going to go out on a limb here and be honest with you and tell you, I love the original Mario movie. I know people hate it because it's not canon. It doesn't make sense. You've got John Leguizamo running around being not even his real biological brother. But if the original weren't a Mario movie and it was just a weird 80s movie, it would be a cult hit.
Oh, it'd be like Swamp Thing.
Yeah. Or it would be like, it's kind of like Mad Max-y a little bit. You know what I mean? It's got that sort of like dystopian Mad Max, Escape from New York kind of vibe.
It did have that. It did. Everything was like, they wore black leather.
Yeah, yeah.
They had long trench coats.
Yeah, Koopa was basically Frank from Blue Velvet, just as a lizard. But anyway, I doubt they're going to go that route with the new one. I think the new one's going to be much more in the canonical, this is a me, Mario. And, you know, it's about time, isn't it, for something like that?
I'm shocked it hasn't happened sooner.
Speaking completely out of ignorance, and listeners could write in if they know, I imagine that there has been some animated films in Japan. I'm just speaking out of ignorance. I might be totally wrong, but I know there's been like 100 Japanese Pokemon movies, and then like the most recent one got it released in America, and like people are seeing it here. But I think there's a possibility. What I'm saying is, I would not be shocked if there was like 9 Mario movies in Japan, but I might be totally wrong. I know that they had a series that we didn't have that got much deeper into the mythology, where like Mario actually came from the Mushroom Kingdom, but then he was abandoned in Earth. Like, they got super deep into it.
I mean, we had a series that they didn't have, starring the adorable Captain Lou Albano.
Right. I think they had the animated segments, but the wraparound with Captain Lou, I think that was all for us.
I think that used to be magic.
I loved it.
It was really good.
Move your arms from side to side. Come on along. Come on, do the Mario. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. So exciting. I loved it.
Is this the first time a Nintendo movie is actually being made? Like a character from Nintendo is going to be used in a movie?
See, video Other than games, Pokemon.
See, video games aren't my strong suit.
Me neither.
We're probably totally
going to And anime is not my strong suit
either.
No, me either. I think you've got Pokemon movies.
Yeah, but that's not an actual Nintendo product.
No, I think it is. Pokemon titles only come out on Nintendo systems. I don't believe they're third party. You don't see titles on the Sony systems or Microsoft systems. So I think they may have not started as a Nintendo property, but I believe they are now.
Okay.
There's been rumblings for years about making a Sonic the Hedgehog movie, but that's not happened.
I think it's going to happen once Mario drops, and I think Mario's going to be successful. If they could capitalize on what the Lego movies do, then I think it'll open up a whole new wave for video game movies.
Yeah, actually, I think those two guys would be perfect, now that they don't have a job with Lucasfilm anymore, I think those two guys would be perfect to do it, because they'll make it cute and funny, which is what you need, I think, from it. We're going to come back and talk about Justice League. Why don't we give them, let's give them the Krypton theme from John Williams.
Oh, we could do that.
Bum, 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 bum.
All right, that'll be our return music. That'll be our return music. So what you guys are going to listen to before that is going to be, let's see, what do we want?
How about something from the Super Friends?
Ooh, I like that. We're just going to throw in just this real... We're just going to keep a real Justice League for the second half, folks.
Absolutely, folks.
So this is Pop Culture Man Children. My name is Emilio Sparks. You're hanging out with Mike Bongiorno. For more information on who we are, what we do, please subscribe to this podcast via iTunes, Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. With ES and MB.
Yeah.
All right. And like our Instagram page, too, because you're going to see a picture of Mike wearing a fedora.
Absolutely. We'll be right back.
Because he does it his way.
Coming from the farthest reaches of the universe to challenge the worst villains on Earth are the most powerful heroes ever in the Battle of the Superpowers Collection. Impossible. The Hall of Justice under attack. Batman behind bars. New from Kenner's Superpowers Collection. Hall of Justice playset. Some assembly required. Vehicles and figures sold separately.
Use the trap door, Batman.
Brainiac's taken over the computer. Joker in the elevator. Evil forces joining for a final assault. Who can restore order?
Superman!
Can Superman save the Hall of Justice? You decide.
That's Emilio Sparks.
That is Mike Bongiorno. And together, we are known as the Pop Culture Man Children, the PC MC Boys.
This weekend, the big nerdy movie was Justice League. And we both saw it. We couldn't see it together because you work in the day and live in the night.
And I, what are you calling me here, pal?
Our schedules are totally different, put it that way. So we can never get it together. Whenever I'm like, hey, let's see a movie, you're like, yeah, meet me at 4 in the morning and we'll see it. And I'm like, that's not going to happen. Can we do it at 4 in the afternoon? But we both saw it on our own. Before we get into this, I want to make a preface, okay? We're probably, in our conversation here, going to criticize Zack Snyder. And we're going to criticize his filmmaking abilities and his aesthetic style, but we're not going to criticize the tragedy that happened to him and his family. And I'll probably at some point insinuate that I think that Justice League is a better movie because the directorial duties were taken over by Joss Whedon. But at the same time, the way that that happened, which was this tragedy, isn't cool. So I just want to say that we're not going to mention that, or there's nothing funny about that. That being said, I don't like Zack Snyder movies. I hated Man of Steel, hated it, and I'm a huge Superman fan. Batman vs. Superman bored me to tears. I liked Wonder Woman, not as much as everyone else, but I liked it. I too felt it was a little too Zack Snyder-y, and when I say Zack Snyder, I mean too dark and gritty and brooding and desaturated, colorless. And I fucking loved Justice League. I loved it. Like, I went in skeptical, ready to hate it, ready to fall asleep, and...
You know, it still has the Zack Snyder aesthetic, though. It's a very dark-looking film.
I would
argue... But they lightened it up in the scenes with Wonder Woman, though.
They lightened it up in a lot of things. I mean, the opening scene, we see Superman, and Superman's got a blue outfit, and his cape is red, and he's smiling, and he's talking to children. And I was like, oh my God, it's Superman.
That is a great intro. Hey, Superman, this is from my podcast. Can you have time for questions? Well, if that's the case.
Right, right. And you could tell, but that's Joss Whedon. And the way you could tell is because he's got that CGI lip that's very obvious because he couldn't shave his Mission Impossible 8 mustache. So all the reshoots are the things that Joss Whedon added. So I'm not taking anything away from Snyder, but I think there's a definite Joss Whedon-ness to it that I feel is like what makes a lot of it work. I do feel like it's physically brighter. You see Superman, you see Wonder Woman, you see things, and I feel like it's got hope, which is what you should have in Superman.
See, I think Wonder Woman was the fluke that took off.
Absolutely.
And then they were like, okay, well, listen, here's some notes. Because all of them have the same feel. If you watch...
Not this new one, I don't think. I feel like they got the memo, don't you?
Yes. But up until that point, they all had the same feel.
Right.
Now, I'm big
including
on,
Wonder Woman.
And I always use the same phrase over and over again when I'm discussing things, tone and texture, because I'm big on that aesthetic.
Absolutely.
So if it goes back to The Man of Steel, it has that tone and texture. And then it goes into Batman vs. Superman. It even looks
the
same.
Which was awful.
Awful. And then it looks the same in Suicide Squad.
Now, that's the one that I haven't seen. So you've seen that, I haven't.
It has it. Even
same deal.
It's the same deal. It's very dark. It's the colors aren't there, and you would think because the Joker wears lavish tapestry that
right.
It would be bright. It's not, and that it comes into
yeah.
Wonder Woman and has the same look in Wonder Woman.
Even though the Wonder Woman, I feel like the acting and the writing is very, it's very sort of upbeat and happy.
Completely,
it still does look like very gray.
Exactly, and that's the issue that I had with Wonder Woman.
Right,
but then they changed it for this one. And it's not so dark, and it's not so brooding, and it's not so menacing.
It's fun.
The only time that they made that happen, and do we want to give spoilers away or no?
Well, yeah, let's give spoilers away, but let's say right now, spoilers are coming.
Yeah.
Or we're really going to get into it.
Was when the only time when Steppenwolf was starting to merge.
I like to dream. When I made that joke in the theater, nobody got it.
Oh.
They were like, shut up, old man. I was like, I'm here alone.
I was thinking it the entire time. I was like, Magic Carpet Ride.
I like your dream. So tell me, yes or no, you liked it or you didn't?
I went into it very, very skeptical.
Sure.
Because of Batman versus Superman.
Of course.
But I was also very hopeful because my spirit animal is Jason Momoa.
Really, is it?
Oh, I love him. I think he's fantastic. I've watched everything that this guy has done.
I think that they brilliantly handled Aquaman by saying, let's just make him like Thor. One, he's super hot. That's half of what he is.
Yeah.
And two, he's like, he's out of time. He doesn't make sense. He's like Thor. And I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
And to have Batman make jokes about, do you talk to fish?
Yeah.
Go ahead and say it.
Listen, I like Affleck's Batman. I'm not going to front. Mm-hmm. I think the way that they address the voice situation from the Christian Bale voice is well done with the microphone and the voice transmitter.
Yeah.
I think that works really well. Jeremy Irons as Alfred is better than Michael Caine. Because
I'm going to say no, but I feel like he fits, for me, he fits better in this world. The Christian Bale-averse, that I don't think could fit in this world.
I don't see it working. I like the way that they dealt with ageism with Batman.
Yeah.
Specifically in the scene after Superman just annihilates them.
Yeah.
And you see that he's all bruised and he's trying to take off his costume, but he can't because his shoulder's separated.
Yeah.
And Wonder Woman comes in sets his shoulder and says, you know, how much longer are you going to be able to keep
She goes,
this up?
You can't do this anymore. And he goes, I can barely do it now. And he takes some scotch like Jack Donaghy from 30 Rock. Bro, I'm totally on board with you. I did not like anything about Batman vs. Superman, but in this movie, I loved Affleck. I like what he's doing. I finally get what he's doing with the character. To me, it felt more like he was...
He's playing it as an older guy.
It felt more like Michael Keaton's Batman.
Yes.
And he's this human, and also he's got this great story arc where he feels super guilty over Superman's death. And he's willing to kill himself more than once in the movie to get Superman back. Even the way he mentored and dealt with the Flash. Like, one of the coolest scenes is when the Flash is nervous because he's never been in a fight before. And Batman's just like, listen, just save one person. That's all you got to do. And, like, I was like, yeah, Batman's mentoring him. Everything that didn't work before clicked into place. It was like, oh, shit, that's Superman. Oh, shit, that's Batman.
See, that's where it gets lost in Batman versus Superman.
Everybody's so emo. Even Wonder Woman in that movie doesn't seem like who she is now. It's everybody just so like blah, blah.
Now, I wonder if that was because Whedon came in and was like, all right, we're going to change the direction a little bit. Or was that a Zack Snyder call? And he was like, okay, we got to change this because people rip this apart.
Right. You don't know whether or not, because Whedon obviously has a much brighter aesthetic. He did The Avengers. He did Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But you're right. At the same time, after the success of Wonder Woman and the failure of Batman vs. Superman, I'm sure even just Zack Snyder alone had to course correct a little bit and be like, okay, I've got to approach it a different way. So it is difficult to try to figure out exactly where the Snyder ends and the Whedon begins, but I think it's possible. But you know what else you saw in this movie? The last movie was all like, they're gods, and they're fighting, and oh, they're going to kill each other, and it was just so boring and self-important. In this movie, we begin, and we see a burglar on a roof, and Batman catches him. And we see little kids talking to Superman, and it's like, yeah, they're superheroes. They're helping people. Like, I was like, there's those characters. Where were they? They weren't there before. There's Batman. There's Wonder Woman. I didn't even think that I would care about Cyborg. And I was like, I like him. I care about him. This is all working.
Because he had some shit going on.
Yeah. With the little bit of time he has on screen, he's got a whole dad story. He's almost like the Hulk of their group. Because he's like, am I a monster? Am I a man?
They dealt with the idea of an internal conflict and introducing a new character to a cinematic universe that necessarily never really had the shine, with the exception in a Teen Titans cartoon.
Right. So even with the public consciousness, he's not even like a Green Lantern, who there's a Green Lantern little cameo in it, or one of the Green Lantern core, at least in the past. But you're right. He was an uphill battle, and I ended up liking him. And I ended up liking The Flash. You know why? Because I don't know if this might be just my reading, but I read The Flash as being on the autism spectrum. There's that really sweet scene where Batman's like, join the group. And he basically says, I'll do it just because I need friends. And he talks how he doesn't understand people. And I was like, oh, The Flash has Asperger's in this.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. I don't know if that's going to be implied, but I think maybe you and me are just thinking way too much into it. But I think the way Ezra...
Well, there's no too into it, you know what I mean?
I think the way Ezra Miller played it was spot on. I think
he was very funny.
everyone, with the exception of him, had this origin and this holier than thou, and I'm going to do this. Batman had a tragedy.
Yeah.
Superman comes from another world. Wonder Woman comes from gods.
Yeah.
And Cyborg was made. But here you have this kid who has this utter intelligence, this brilliance about him, doesn't use it. It's kind of a slacker.
Right.
Doesn't want to let people know like what he does or his.
He's still sort of like, he's sort of living his life in the past because he's like the character always is trying to exonerate his father.
I love that Billy Crudup played his dad.
Yeah, he was good.
And Dr. Manhattan for those that want to play along at home.
Yeah,
and then you see, you know, his dad tell him, "No, you got to start living for your life.
Yeah.
I'm not getting out of here anytime soon.
Yeah.
So you got to start living for you and you're brilliant. Live up to your brilliance and your greatness."
He was good in that little role. I think some of the problems with movies like this is they're too long and you spend way too much time setting everybody up. And this movie, even though it was a long film, it didn't feel long. I never was like, "Oh, it's a this scene." You know, I never was like, "Oh, let's not go back to it." The only scene that actually, and I hate to say this because I love her with all my heart, the only scene that kind of felt like it wasn't necessary was the opening scene of Wonder Woman stopping the terrorists. I kind of felt like this was probably reshot in because they were like, more Wonder Woman, more Wonder Woman. It was a cool scene. I liked when the terrorist had the machine gun and he was shooting at the people and she's literally jumping in front of every bullet. But I felt like,
Here's why I think that scene is important, because the terrorist, he makes reference to killing the modern world and the death of the man in the flying cape.
Right. And also, right, so it's sort of like the whole this is the world after Superman thing.
Yeah.
But it's also, I think, and I caught this the second time I saw it, he's a little bit like Steppenwolf in that he's just like, let's just burn this down.
Yeah.
So he kind of sets up Steppenwolf, who is the worst part of the movie. The weakest
Horrible.
Element in the movie is Steppenwolf. He doesn't look good. He looks like a arcade game from the 80s character.
Looks like the Wonder Woman villain.
But not even as good. I don't totally understand his motivations. They're never clear. He's going after not one, but three MacGuffins. He's definitely the weakest part of a movie that I think is good. Yeah, I guess you're right. That opening is important narratively.
Because it sets up the world without Superman, and
right.
You need him. He is this figure of not only hope, but he's a figure of fear.
Right.
Even Steppenwolf said it.
Yeah.
When Superman died, that was the time.
In Batman vs. Superman, they said Superman is a beacon of hope 1,000 times, but saying it isn't showing it. And that's one of the things that didn't work in that movie, which was this Superman just seems depressed. He seems moody. And in this movie, I was like, this is Superman. This is the Superman of hope.
But see, but I think he seemed moody because that's how they wanted him to play it, that they're treating him like a god, a deity, and he doesn't...
Very alien.
And he doesn't want that. He doesn't want special treatment. He wants to do what he wants to do because of the teachings of his parents, and I like the nod to Kevin
right.
Costner with the photo.
Right. But he doesn't get humanity that much in these movies. Like, I think Zack Snyder's take on the character was he's very alien. And that's what I think was very off-putting for Superman fans. Because, yes, he's alien, but he should have that humanness in him from his upbringing. You know, also, I have to say, both aesthetically and narratively, the problem with A Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman is Marvel was being very light and upbeat. So DC was like, let's do the opposite. And also, they had just come off the Dark Knight trilogy, which was very dark, but of course, that works for those movies.
It works for the character.
Right,
Batman.
Exactly. And then they said, okay, let's just take that and put it on Superman, and you don't need a dark Superman. They finally course-corrected. I really love the scene in this movie where Batman is talking to Alfred about bringing Superman back, and he says, he's more human than I am. He lived in this world. He had love. Like, I was like, wow, that's so brilliant. Like, that's good acting. That's good writing. And there's motivation, character motivation. I get why he's putting this team together. I get what he's feeling.
When they resurrect Superman.
Yeah.
And then he goes off the deep end. To me.
That was funny.
That highlights Superman being Superman. Now, I was never a Superman guy. I always thought it was too campy. He
right.
was too Boy Scout.
I loved it.
You have this guy that can do anything. Pre-crisis, Mm-hmm. Superman was just this living embodiment of I can fly in space without a breathing apparatus,
yeah.
And you know, I could probably fly directly into
the sun.
So
you like him being dark?
I like
and
him.
Almost killing Batman.
Yes, because
do
that shows bleed? That shows who he could be,
right?
If he didn't have
Lois.
A moral compass, and that is Lois,
right? She's the big guns. Right, I like that because it was a sort of a reference to in the last movie, Batman vs. Superman, he had all these kryptonite guns and kryptonite suit, and you're like, what are the big guns? And the big guns were Lois. Not only is it clever within the world of the movie, it's clever, it shows that the filmmaking is smarter because that would be the big guns, Lois. I love her, I love Amy Adams, but she's probably the weakest part of all these movies just because they don't give her enough to do. But even in this movie, I liked her. I was like, okay, I get her more now. She's heartbroken. I get that she can't even talk about why she's heartbroken. I get the relationship between her and Superman's Earth mother.
Because it shows how much of a badass he actually can be.
Yeah.
And if he didn't have so much self-control,
yeah,
you would see that, you know, he's unfuckwittable. Nobody's messing with him.
I liked it because I thought it was a good sequence, but I like him as the traditional Superman. I like happy-go-lucky Superman. And I know that that's not complex, but he's archetypical, you know? He's the archetype of superheroes, and I think it's okay that he'd be that. And I think that's what this movie learned. After that sequence where they bring him back, which is a cool sequence, I like Diana being like, Kal-El, no! And I love Aquaman being like, ah, he's fucked up. Like, this, like that was pretty funny.
That was, that whole scene started off great.
Yeah.
When you see a shot of him. He looks around. He's trying to process. Wait a minute. I was dead. Well, what is all this?
Right.
You know, when he's looking around and you can see he's starting to regain and he's starting to be a little bit calm. And then they pop in and the Cyborg's reading Aquaman's heart rate. And he's like, dude, bring it down.
Yeah,
he
yeah,
can
yeah.
sense this. Bring it down. Like,
and he's like, something's not right. My heart rate's up because something ain't right.
Yeah, exactly. He goes, I'm looking at it like, something's not right because my heart rate. Like,
yeah.
You know, and then she says, Kal-El, no. And then they start fighting.
You're the last son of Krypton. Remember who you are.
And nothing's working. And then you see the Flash, who is literally starting to have a panic attack.
Yeah, 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 which is great.
And there is a shot where he is revving up to try to attack Superman. And he is moving.
Mm-hmm.
He's booking it. And then all you just see Superman just look at him and start turning his head. And Ezra Miller, the look on Ezra Miller's face, by saying, wait a minute. No,
He's as fast as me.
And he's looking at him. And Superman's just in disgust and then just throws the other two and just hooks him.
Yeah. There was a lot of funny scenes of Ezra Miller running at something and getting knocked down and like hitting a wall.
Tripping over his feet.
Yeah, yeah. That was a cool sequence, but then I liked when he was Superman. I liked when he went back to the farm, and then he's like, I got to go back to Bruce, and he's smiling, and he's, you know, he's Superman.
Well, that's because it resets the tone.
He forgave him.
I think he forgave him.
And Bruce bought the bank to buy back his parents' house.
Yeah.
And more than once, Bruce sacrifices himself. Batman was totally ready to die there when Superman almost kills him. And throws him to the ground and dislocates his shoulder. He was ready to die there because he was like, Superman is more needed on this team than I am.
But yet Batman was the leader.
But he was ready to give it up to Superman.
And I think they saw that and they were like, oh,
yeah,
now it makes sense.
Yeah.
Because Wonder Woman was against it. She didn't want to bring him back.
Well, remember when they were fighting, Batman and Wonder Woman were fighting, and Flash goes, you know, if she kills you, we're going to have her back, right? Which is, I love the whole thing of them all being awestruck by how beautiful she is.
Even that scene where they're going to, I guess, Russia.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're traveling on the ship.
Yeah.
And Momoa is sitting on the Batmobile, and then he starts saying, you know, yeah, I'm ready to die. It's a good way to go out. Honorable battle. And then all of a sudden he starts really getting open.
You're beautiful. And God, he goes
really hot.
No, he's not really. Like, he goes, I'm young. I still have shit I want to do. I'm scared of this. I've never had friends before. Like, he starts talking all this truth, and then you realize he's got the lasso of truth that he's sitting on, or it's wrapped around him somehow. And he's just – it's probably the funniest moment in the movie because Diana's then like, oh, I thought that was beautiful. And, like, you got to see his, like, inner emotions. Some people have been criticizing this movie saying it's more in the typical cinematic – patriarchal male gaze that the Amazonians have skimpier outfits, and that is true. But I have to say, I didn't think it was that bad. And I love Wonder Woman, and I think it's amazing that it was directed by this amazing director who is female, Patty Jenkins. But I actually felt like Wonder Woman itself had more of a male gaze problem, because it seemed like the movie was too much from Steve Trevor's perspective. It was a lot of him looking at her rather than her being the protagonist. Because remember, people say male gaze all the time, but the theory of the male gaze is much more complicated than people think of it. And it's not just about, okay, looking at beautiful women on the screen. It's about who you identify with in the movie. And in Wonder Woman, a lot of the identification is with Steve Trevor. So I actually felt like, even though there were skimpier outfits in Justice League, I actually felt more like she was a badass in this. Even though she was beautiful and they made mention of it, I felt like she was less an object in this. I understand the criticism of their skimpier outfits, but I want to get to this because this is the thing that made me well up like a little boy. The thing that got me the most was when Zack Snyder left the film, Hans Zimmer, who was going to do the music, also left. And very quickly at the, you know, the last hour, Joss Whedon said to Danny Elfman, "Hey, can you come on? I know it's last minute, but could you come on and do this?" And Danny Elfman said, "Yeah." But what he did, which I think is amazing and baller, was like, "Yeah, I know that with Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman, you've been building your own themes, but I'm actually going to use my Batman theme, and I'm going to use John Williams' Superman theme throughout the whole movie." It's not super obvious, but it's also not hidden at all.
No, yeah, it's great.
And when you see the bat signal in the sky and you hear Danny Elfman's dun-dun-dun-dun, I literally, my heart...
It was smart.
My heart cried. I was like, yeah.
It was a good homage.
Spoiler alert, at the end, when they're fighting Steppenwolf, and Steppenwolf says something like, "You don't know the truth," and then we hear Superman's voice go, "I believe in truth," and you hear, da-na-na-na-na. Yeah. I got a little misty in my eyes. I was like, oh my God, it's John Williams. It was, and I love, I don't know if he was allowed to do that, if he just did it on his own. I sat through the credits because it's a post-credit scene, and I saw that they credit John Williams' Superman score. So they used enough of it that it had to be credited. And I thought that was awesome. So we loved it. And you know what? I feel like there's going to be some fallout in my life. I texted my friend Kat last night. Not Kat.
Oh, not my Kat.
Yeah, not Kat of Comic Trips. And I said, "I loved Justice League," to which she replied simply, "You're dead to me." So people are, you know, it doesn't have a good Rotten Tomato score. People are obviously comparing it to Thor because Thor just came out, but
see,
I like
unfair.
It more than Thor.
But see, that's unfair. We shouldn't be...
Well, you know, it's not fair, but it's what happens.
But why, though? Why?
Just because the proximity, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but here's... Why make Marvel the end-all, be-all? Why make it the Bible?
I guess because they're both out right now.
But the action sequences in this film...
Mm-hmm.
Hold up and look just as good as the action sequences in the Avenger films.
I agree. Well, look, it doesn't. You're right in the sense that it doesn't make sense to always make these arbitrary.
It's two different worlds. It's two different things. You can't allow it to be.
But you know they're both out right now. You know what I mean? If you're going to the theater right now and you want to buy a ticket to a Capes and Tights movie, your choices are Thor, Ragnarok, or Justice League, and for my money, go see Justice League. Not that Thor wasn't bad. Thor was good.
It also answers the question of how far is Metropolis from
Gotham
City?
It's a stone's throw away.
It's literally...
That's still from Batman vs. Superman. They made it right next to each other, which was so stupid, and they have to continue with that.
It's legitimately Kansas City and St. Louis, so I truly believe that Gotham City is St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah, it's two major cities right next to each other. It's stupid, but hey, we liked it.
I thought it was great.
So what are we going to do? What are we going to give them in the break? Maybe a little bit of Danny Elfman, Batman?
Yes.
All right, we'll be back with our obsessions.
No, you will not hear a new theme for Batman. You'll hear Batman's theme for Batman.
The Hans Zimmer hot score for the last film? Or
no. You'll hear Batman's theme. Batman has only had one theme.
Your theme.
Yeah. Now, Hans has done some wonderful, very driving, rhythmic stuff, but there's only been ever one theme. And it's Batman's theme.
Oh,
We are Pop Culture Man Children. You can look us up on the iTunes free of charge.
Yeah, you can look us up free of charge.
You can download this podcast, rate, review, and subscribe, Pop Culture Man Children.
We're not behind a paywall.
No.
We're not hiding behind a paywall like some other people, Jimmy Pardo.
Pardo.
He's got fans, though, is the difference.
But give us a little review. We have one up there. Some guy said that he listened with his kid, which I thought was nice.
I didn't even read that.
I read that one, yeah. You can go to your iTunes.
That was my dad.
It was, most likely it was. No, but I know he was a listener of the old podcast because he used a reference of a nickname.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, okay, so this is a fan.
That's for the fan to decide.
The one fan that we have. So for more information on the iTunes, just search us Pop Culture Man Children, hit subscribe, and give us a little review ski.
So it's our favorite segment, which is what are you obsessed with right now?
Obsession.
So who should go first? You want to rock, paper, scissor it?
Yeah, sure.
Rock, paper, scissors, say shoot. Oh, you were paper, I'm scissors, I go.
Gum bum.
My current obsession. Come with me, will you, on a journey? Back to August 21st, 1975. A child named Alicia Roanne Witt is born. This is from her Wikipedia page. An American actress, singer, songwriter, and pianist. She first came to fame as a child actress after being discovered by David Lynch, who cast her in the film Dune in 1984, and as a guest role on his television series Twin Peaks in 1990. But oh, she kept going. She was in Mr. Holland's Opus. She was in the sitcom Sybil, Law and Order, Criminal Intent, The Walking Dead, The Sopranos, Nashville, Two and a Half Men, Friday Night Lights, most recently Justified. She was in Cameron Crowe's Vanilla Sky. She is quite beautiful, but that pales in comparison to her abilities as an actress.
So what is the obsession? Is it with her filmography?
Well, the obsession...
Or the milkiness of her skin?
Well, the obsession actually is in her current project, which is season 2 of Fox's The Exorcist TV series. She is playing two roles. She's playing Nikki, who is the recently deceased wife of the protagonist. So she plays Nikki in flashbacks. But then, brilliantly, and this is where my obsession comes from, she plays a demon who's using Nikki's likeness to get into the protagonist's soul and get him to give up his soul. Nobody watches the Exorcist TV show but me. I love it.
I've never even seen the movie. It's too scary for me.
It's one of my favorite movies ever.
My mother calls me a little bitch because I won't watch it.
Well, you are. It's one of the best movies ever. You'd love it. From the film, we always just see outside the perspective of the characters around the person being possessed by the demon. But in season 1 of The Exorcist, which was much more like the film, the exorcists, the priests themselves stay in it, but there's new families and new, like, they're like adventurers, the exorcists.
So he goes from city to city.
Right.
Battling the devil.
Exactly. Okay. Or battling demons. Okay. In season 1, the demon was the same demon from the movie Pazuzu. And what they did in season 1 was they did this clever thing where you can't just be possessed. You have to let them in. So what they do is they appear to you and they get your trust. They confuse you. They get into your memories. They get into your soul. So season 1, I'm sorry, I forget the actor's name. There's this brilliant actor who plays Pazuzu. And he's this creepy old man. He's got a real pedophile vibe. And every time you see him, he actually looks more disheveled and gross. So he did a great job. In season 2... it started off with this little girl. I'll say spoiler alert. For the first 4 episodes, the family in season 2 is John Cho from Star Trek, a very handsome man. He was also on season 3 of Difficult People. He runs a foster home. He used to run it with his wife, but she passed away. She committed suicide. So he and the whole family are dealing with her suicide. It's him and a bunch of kids. And one of the kids is this little girl who is afraid to go outside. The Exorcist series is known for having big twists and shocks. That's what's sort of cool about it. At the end of, I believe, episode 4 or 5, we find out that the little girl was never really there, that the little girl was in his mind, and the little girl who... you're led to believe the little girl is who's going to be possessed, but then you realize, oh no, dad's who's possessed, and the little girl is the demon. And so that's a big shock. But after that happens, the little girl sort of transforms and becomes his ex-wife, who's Alicia Witt. And Alicia Witt is so good as the demon because it's hard to even explain. She does this thing with her face. And I even wondered, I rewound it and it was like, is this CG? She'll like smile at you like, yes, I'm your wife. I miss you. I'm sorry I left you. But there's this like wrong thing about the smile. There's this little thing in her lip where it's like, no, you're a fucking demon. And she'll hug you and embrace you and be like, no, don't listen to them. When the priests are trying to exorcise him, she's like, they're trying to separate us. Don't let them separate us. And she's so good at being this demon. And the last episode that just aired on Friday night was a tour de force. It was the entirety of the episode was John Cho is pinned down to the bed, like the classic exorcist scene, and the priests are trying to exorcise him. But basically the whole episode is built on memories of his wife, but each memory is basically, well, you keep going through the same memory again, but she keeps corrupting it more and making it more dark, and you're like, where is it the real memory, where is it the demon? And it's just, it's this double role and she's just crushing it.
What channel is this on?
This is on Fox 5.
You ever think there'll be a Lucifer tie-in?
Oh god, I hope not. That's when I'll stop watching. But I really do want to stress that it's not just my boyish crush, yeah, that she is really talented. She reprised her role from Twin Peaks when she was a little kid, and she played the same character as an adult in the new season of Twin Peaks.
Is that what you think a streaming service with a show like The Exorcist would probably be stronger? Because you say nobody technically watches it.
Right, because it's on a network on Friday night, which is Desert Town. Basically, since TGIF ended, Friday night has been a ghost town, pardon my pun, for TV shows. And, you know, I'll talk to people that are pretty, like, in the know about pop culture. And I'm like, are you watching The Exorcist? And people go, you mean, like, the movie? Like, they don't even know it exists and it's in season two.
So they would probably benefit from
streaming. Oh, yeah. If The Exorcist were on streaming and if it were, you know, if they put, you know, even a little bit of fucking marketing into it, I think people would be into it.
But do you think television shows like that are specifically to bring them to Hulu because Hulu will pay for the rights for it and this is how these shows make money?
I don't watch it on Friday nights. I found it on Hulu. I found season one after season one ended and I watched the entire season one in 2 days and fell in love with it. And now I follow it week by week, but I still don't watch it on Friday. I watch it on Saturday mornings because, as you know, while you're going to sleep, I'm getting up to start my day like a gentleman. So
yeah,
around 6 a.m.
You have nothing. Why are you up at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday?
Well, I've got to see what's going on with Alicia Witt.
Yeah, but you could do that at like noon. What's so special about doing it at 6 in the morning?
Well, I mean, there's nothing special about it. It's just that I'm up.
Is it because you're the only one that's up and dawn's early light and the twinkles through the blinds in your room and you get to watch it in peace?
Emilio, this is why I catch the worm and you don't. So that's what I'm into.
That's great. That's great.
Basically, it's The Exorcist that I'm really into, but she's killing it. And
well, you need that.
I did fall into a little bit of a YouTube Alicia Witt hole.
Yeah.
Do you know what she does more than anything, actually? She does Christmas movies for Lifetime.
Oh, but my brother must know who she is then.
Oh, he definitely will. I just want to read you some of these titles. It's insane. She's done more Christmas movies than Bing Crosby. And now she's having a moment where she's doing, in my judgment, better work. She's having a little bit of a moment, but that's kind of what she's been doing.
So that's what pays the bills.
Yeah.
The Christmas movies pay the bills.
Yeah. When did you first see her? I remember her from the Sybil sitcom as Sybil Shepherd's daughter. That's the first time I remember seeing
her. No, Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks? Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, she is 42 years old, but she looks about 28, 29.
Her body's a temple, man.
Alicia Witt, everybody. Get on board.
All right, so my obsession. It's not a movie. It's not a book. It's not a television show.
It's not a human being.
It's a toy. Like, no, it's a human being.
Oh.
But it's his music. I've been obsessed with the music of Dennis Wilson.
Really?
Do you know who Dennis Wilson is?
Was he a Beach Boy?
Yeah. But he was like the Beach Boy, like second to Brian. Like Brian,
I know Brian.
Well, Brian's genius is always going to be like
he's
that.
He's like a schizophrenic genius.
Musically, even Paul McCartney said it. You don't get better than Brian Wilson.
He's the Mozart of rock and roll.
But a lot of people are saying that Dennis, had he not died at 39, was coming into his own.
And what year was that?
As a songwriter. He died in 83.
All I know is Brian, and I only know that from that movie with John Cusack.
I've been doing the pre-production for my I want to say final album, but it's going to be one of my last ones because I'm taking a break making music for a while. And yeah.
I've been talking to your fans, and we'd like it to be the last one.
Yeah, they're terrible. not really. But I've done about maybe 6 or 7 albums.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to do my 8th. And I was listening to a lot of Pacific Ocean Blue, mm-hmm. which is Dennis Wilson's album.
Solo?
Yeah, it's a solo record.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been listening to that, and I'm really into this California mystic sound that was created, that it's, even though it has to deal with, and the Beach Boys were notorious for the surf,
right?
You know, surf rock. But this California mystic vibe was more like in love with the beach and the scenery and
yeah.
Mexico and just oceans. And it's just it has a really good vibe to it. And the instrumentations of pianos and saxes and really good drums and bass yeah. lines and a lot of stacking.
Does he sing too?
Yeah, he sings a lot of stacking harmonies. Mm-hmm. And I'm obsessed with all things the Beach Boys.
Okay.
I think Pet Sounds is probably the greatest album ever.
Okay.
He wrote Forever.
Really?
Yeah. So, like, the John Stamos classic that everybody sings now yeah. at weddings, if it wasn't for Dennis Wilson, yeah. Forever wouldn't... Yeah. And Forever's his song, too, because he was the drummer in the group.
Uh-huh.
But he's also, when they would record their vocals, they would also be part of the harmony.
What's your favorite song?
For Beach Boys or from Pacific Ocean Blue?
Pacific Ocean Blue.
Oh, it's River Song. It's the first record.
Okay.
Yeah. It just hits because you hear.
Now, you know I'm not a music guy. Would I recognize it if you played it for me?
No, like, you wouldn't. Well, because I wouldn't. Nobody would. Because
but I'd like it.
It wasn't a chart topper, that's for sure. But man, oh man, like some of the best music doesn't really need to chop the tart.
I mean, isn't that true with the best everything? Just because something wasn't widely received doesn't mean that it's not awesome.
Yeah, man. But there's stuff where it has that New Orleans jazz sound to it. The harmonies are great, and to me, some of the best work that he does is with Carl Wilson. He, to me, is the best vocalist in that group.
Really?
Because, yeah, the harmonies, and if you listen to the harmonies in Forever, for instance, mm-hmm. everybody knows, there's a part where they start going at the end where they go, na, 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 whoa, 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 and it's just both of them going back and forth in the same pitch, in the same tone, but the way it's EQ'd, man, it gives me goosebumps, man. Like, legitimately, like I started researching synesthesia, and I see the colors.
Really?
And it's odd. Like, it becomes really intense for me when I hear, like, certain tones and songs. My skin gets all tingly wow. and shit. Yeah, it's crazy.
That's amazing. I'm not a music guy, and people always say to me, like, what do you mean you're not a music guy? Like, you're a human being. And I go, I know, it's weird. For some reason, my whole life, I've always been into visual arts, and music never did it for me. I feel like I was born without something, and you're born with something, because what you're describing, I've always felt jealous of. The feeling, and to see it that way, I would love to see. I would love to experience that.
Well, I think if you would listen to music more...
Yeah,
I think.
Well, I've got a transistor radio in the garage.
Well, then it's perfect. Then, or you can go into a YouTube hole and you can just listen to some Beach Boy stuff.
Yeah,
and you can listen to some Beatles, and you can listen to Bob Dylan, and you can listen to Miles Davis. I mean, even early Fleetwood Mac.
I was into the Beatles a lot when I was young, and I like Fleetwood Mac. I have to say, I do like Fleetwood Mac.
But the Peter Green Fleetwood Mac, I think you would like Showbiz Blues.
Okay,
I think that's a really dope record. And I didn't know about who Dennis Wilson was, and I had to read about him, and I had to literally engulf myself. And by his appearance, mm-hmm. it looked, because he was a pretty blonde dude from California with that Beach Boy vibe, he was happy-go-lucky, but he was the stereotypical live fast and die young motto.
Uh-huh.
It was just, he had a wild side of brooding, self-loading sensitivity, and he was very anxious. He did a lot of drugs.
Right.
He was friends with Charles Manson.
Yeah.
It's insane how, like, yeah, and there was a big guilt with all the stuff that Manson was doing.
Yeah.
That he felt, because he brought Manson into that Hollywood scene.
Yeah.
So he felt guilty about that. It's just insane how good of a musician he really was. They said that for the last couple of moments of his life, that he was living as a homeless nomad. The guy was worth millions of dollars, but decided to live on the streets.
So they all kind of were a little nuts. They were all kind of mentally unwell.
Well, the drugs messed them up. Drugs messed them up hard, man. Hard. Yeah. But they have these sessions, man. You can listen to them on YouTube. They even have one called Cocaine Sessions, where it's just him and his brother, and they're just all fried out of cocaine, and and they're just talking about music. It was released August 22nd, 77, and a couple of songs you should listen to. River Song, Friday Night, Dreamers, really good, Pacific Ocean Blue, Farewell My Friend, End of Sorrow. Yeah. There's another one that's not even on the album. It's called Holy Man, and it's just a instrumental.
Okay.
Real great keys, Moog synthesizers.
Yeah.
It was real early on. And when they remastered and remixed Pacific Ocean Blue, they had Taylor Hawkins from the Foo Fighters put words to the song Holy Man. It's just dope.
We should play their music for the legal amount that constitutes fair use.
I think 30 seconds.
30 seconds, yeah.
Meanwhile, if you go on the Wrestle Rap Podcast, we're just playing full songs.
Yeah. Well, you've got a whole legal team over there.
We do.
Well, that's really cool, man. I have to get into that.
You know what? We'll give him a little tickle.
All right.
We'll give him a little tickle. After Animal says go bye-bye, we'll play a little bit. Like, only a little 30 seconds.
All right.
But that's what I'm obsessed with, because it's a sound to me, and I'm always looking for sounds.
That's really cool. I'm going to get into that. And you got to get into Alicia Witt.
I'm actually going to get over my fears of The Exorcist.
Yeah.
I'm going to attempt. Do I even need to watch season one, or should I watch season two?
Season one is better. I mean, honestly, if I were to say do it, watch the first film.
I can't do that. I can't.
I'll make an Alicia Witt supercut, and I'll just send it your way, okay?
All right.
I'll make a reel for you.
I can't sit and watch that movie.
I understand. You get scared.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're an Italian boy. You're scared of the demons.
I am.
Yeah, and witches.
I don't believe in none of that.
You ready to go bye-bye?
I'm ready to go bye-bye. Should we kick it to Animal?
Yep.